So you were wondering why I thought this might be worth doing, right?
Yeah, I'm curious why you think this is. Yeah, because I had called you to share something that was still very vivid, very real for me, because it happened
Yeah.
on Thursday night, right after our recording. So I had been holding on to it, and then we had talked, and I forgot to had mentioned it to you, and I felt just the release of needing to say what happened to me.
Yeah.
And I thought it was important just to share it with you,
Yeah.
what transpired in that conversation later was sort of, well, what that wasn't fair, and had it been someone else, what could have happened
Yeah.
to other people?
Yeah.
Because I said what I said to the police officers, which I can relate later,
Yeah.
but I feel like what happened to me was very mild, but it was very not all right. It wasn't all right. It just, I have been approached by police officers in the past, and that hasn't happened to, well, it has happened to me. This has happened to me before with another friend, but most of my interactions with police officers, me, not the world and what happens out there, but I've had other experiences, I'll say, not most. I've had other experiences where it has not happened like it happened on Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what would have happened to someone else, but to me, that's not important. That is important, but I know that what you told me did happen was pretty outrageous. So I felt like it's something that, because we do actually, as little, we don't necessarily have this massive audience, but we have a format for exposing these things. So I felt like, let's go ahead and put a real face behind how this shit goes down with the police sometimes.
Yeah.
Kenny, I don't know if you wanna.
So yeah, I'm curious, about your experience, I may just sprinkle in some of my own experience because I have some run-ins with the police, not as violent or as it sounds from, we'll go into your story, but it's still very interesting, and so I'm curious as to, what you went through, you personally, your emotions, because, yeah, it's sadly it's not new, and they don't ask questions first. I think unfortunately, the approach is to escalate things rather than de-escalation, and so, but I'm curious, as to your what happened to you, and I'm really kind of in the blind. I know just vaguely, but yeah, I'm really interested in your story.
So I think what Kenny said is a perfect entry point for starting. And from everything I know about the story, Kenny, without even knowing the story, because Kenny, you don't know the story, do you? He pretty much described everything that happened. And that's interesting to me. It's interesting that you already captured all the features to me of this story. So
Because I mean,
I think, Eduardo, it's just worth just starting. And like, as if you're speaking to Kenny, you know.
yeah. Well, what happened was Thursday night, I received a call from a friend. I won't say his name here, but he's deaf, and he during this shelter in place mandate, he's been feeling somewhat isolated, especially since he is deaf, and it's challenging sometimes to communicate with the people you live with if you're the only one that can sign and your family only speaks and they're hearing folks. So he asked me on his way to work, because he works in South San Francisco, if he could stop by and we could chat. And I said, yes, we can. And it was right after our own episode on Thursday night, which ended late, I think 9:30, 10. And so I said, all right. And so we went into his van, and he said, let's drive somewhere nice, where we could potentially see most of the city on a hill or something, you know, where we can just chat. And so he thought maybe we could go to McLaren Park, which is very close to where I live. And so we drove there, and we parked, and we decided to have a chat there, and just, we turned off the lights, everything was just sort of, there were some, I think there are two other cars that were parked there, and I do remember there was one, at least one other car parked there. So we were just sitting, and the lights are on, because, you know, when you're signing, it's a visual language, so you have to sign, you know, in the light.
The car light is on.
Yes, yeah. The inside of the car light is on. So we're quite visible. And so we're signing away. Then I think after 14 minutes, we hear some firecrackers out in the distance, not close to where we are, but in the distance. We're sort of like, oh, what's that? That's when, 2 or 3 minutes after that, a police officer car pulls over right in front of the van and shows our light brightly right onto us, and we're not able to see. And immediately, the only thing I thought is like, oh, shoot. If this officer doesn't have any training to deal with deaf and hard hearing, they're going to do something real stupid, because they'll think that a deaf person is defying or not listening because they don't understand. They can't hear because they, you know, the instructions, they just won't be able to understand the instructions. And police officers, usually they shine a very bright light on you. And for a deaf person, that you're very obscuring their eyes, which prevents them from figuring out how to, because their language is visual. It isn't auditory. And so we hear, oh, I hear rather, he didn't hear it. I hear the officer, what is it, with a megaphone or attached to the vehicle, say, put your hands up, put your hands up, and start cursing. I don't remember every single curse word here, but they started cursing.
Can you give examples of the cursing? Like what? Like,
yeah.
Damn, what?
Well, when they did the megaphone, when they got out, they said, put your fucking hands up. Put your fucking hands up. They started yelling. And we put our hands up in the car, and I tried to sign immediately to tell him, let me interpret for you, don't move. But as soon as I did that, don't fucking move, like that. And I thought, oh, how will he be able to understand what is going on? I won't be able to, if I can't move, I mean, it's, you can't, he has,
right.
He has to understand what is going on. And so the police officers surround, they surround over to the side of the windows. And I start yelling out, he is deaf, you know, even though the windows are blocked. He is deaf, he is deaf. And the guns were already drawn. The guns were already drawn. I do remember that. And I'm trying to make sure that what I say that is going to be on record, because it's be out there on YouTube forever, if I doubt it, but if there is, the SFPD does get whiff of this video and they decide to release video footage, I am very, 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 can feel confident saying that the guns were drawn. The guns were drawn. And so they surround the furgoneta, como se dice, van, and come over on my side, and I keep saying, he's deaf, he's deaf. The car door is open. Don't fucking move. And I and I And I keep, and then when they open the door, I say, he is deaf. I keep yelling. I keep being repetitive. Anyone who knows me on this episode knows that I keep repeating myself lots and lots and lots. And so I just want to make sure that it's in there, you know, it's right there, that they get it. They didn't say anything to that. They pull me out.
By grabbing your clothes? By grabbing
Yeah, they pull me out, yes. They pull me out. And I'm just watching for my friend. And I can't see everything because my specs are not on, you know, like mis gafas. And so I can't see. It's sort of blurry. At the same time, the lights are real bright. Everything is happening too fast. Oh, I keep yelling out. And I say, you know, as I'm being handled, and I say really loud, be careful with him. Be careful with him. Be careful with him. He is deaf. He does not understand what's happening. And I'm saying, shut up. Shut the fuck up. I'm being told. And I'm saying, you need to know that he is deaf. He is deaf. And I can just see the headlines already. I yell out. I can see the headlines already. Police officers shoot school educator and disabled person. Imagine that. And they tell me, what the fuck was that sound? What was that? And I say, how am I supposed to know? How is that connected to us? You tell me. You're the police officers. We're not. You're supposed to be doing your job. And they say, shut the fuck up. And they're like, I'm on the ground, and they open the back doors and they start checking. And I said, they keep asking, the male white officer keeps asking me, what was that noise? Asking me insistently. And I said, I don't know. How is that connected to us? This is, and he says, what are you doing here? He says, what the fuck are you doing here? And I said, I said to him, what else do you expect us to do during this pandemic? This is what we're trying to do. Stay isolated and yet stay socially engaged. It's hard. And I remember saying this to the officer, almost pleading to be understanding. This is hard on all of us. This isn't easy during this time. You know, people, I didn't say this part, but I'm telling you all what my message by that, what I was trying to say is, some people don't have the loneliness that this is really going through our nation with people who are either elderly or don't have people who they live with or whatever, you know. But I said what I said. I said this is hard on all of us. And I don't think that you're, just said, this is hard on all of us. Yeah. Check through the, I have to make sure what I say, because I don't remember everything, but I do remember those major points.
Are these conversations happening where you're on the ground?
Yeah, I'm on the ground. Yeah.
Face down? Back then?
That was earlier. That was earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you face down?
I know I was grabbed behind like this, held back onto the van, and put face down onto the car hood, and then I was put on the ground.
And did they put their guns away at some point, or their guns out? Do you know?
Once we were on the ground, and the officers were checking the van, the guns must have been in. How could they have done the light, the gun,
yeah,
at the same time?
Okay. So, I mean, there's a lot of parts that probably were moving fast, and
fast, Kenny.
But so you were restrained at some point. So you don't know how you got to that situation, but you worked with restraint. Yes.
I wasn't just ordered out. I was grabbed out. I wasn't ordered out. You know, like, get out, step out the vehicle, sir. No.
And thrust onto the hood of your car, like you were pushed onto the hood of your car.
Yes.
Or the van. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
It was, yes, the van.
And
then onto the ground.
And this.
And then
onto the ground. Okay, onto the van and onto the ground.
Yes. told to stay on the ground, kept my hands up, and then I remember my friend was sitting far from me, which is not, you know, again, where is the access to language? I had said he is deaf, and I even said, I'm going to interpret whatever's happening. There wasn't any allowance for him to understand what is happening. He was completely in the dark, so to speak, about what is happening. And I waved over to him as I was like this, and I tried to sign. And when I did that, they said, keep your fucking hands up. It was yelled at. And I yelled out saying, he is supposed to know what's happening, what's going on. He needs access. His access to language is signing. He needs to know what is going on. They didn't care.
Right.
Another vehicle came, pulled up, two other officers, and two other officers came, so a combined total of four. And the officer that was checking the van with his flashlight turned to me and asked me for my ID. And I said, can I put my hands down? Because if I put my hands down, I'm just afraid what you might do. And he said, get your fucking ID. And I said, all right, I'm going for my ID. And I took out my ID. I handed it over and I said, you can check me up. I work at I am an educator. And there's nothing on me. I have a clean record. Nor that matters, right? I'm saying here, nor that matters, because this is not the approach and the protocol that I think should be followed, by the way. Going back to the story, I said, I have a clean record. You won't find anything on me. Go ahead. And they did. And I just remember signing to my friend ID. He gave his ID. They checked. They came on over. And when they did get my ID, they went to go congregate the four police officers. And I think they were updating them what was happening and talking about us. The police officer came.
At that time, then, do you remember whether, like, your hands are then free to move? You're just sitting?
No.
So
my hands had to be up still.
Okay. And then you're seated or lying?
I'm on the ground seated, yeah, okay. With my knees bent. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Your friend is in the same position?
Yes, with his hands up, but on the asphalt,
right,
of the street.
Okay.
In front of the car vehicle with the bright light showing up on his face, again, obscuring his own way, yeah, to understand the world and not knowing what's happening. So the officer comes over and continues checking the vehicle. And I said, you can check my rucksack. There's nothing. You'll find nothing in there. I have nothing to hide.
Did he ask to check it, or you invited him to check it?
When he touched it and he was looking, he wasn't looking in my rucksack, but he was looking around there. I told him he could.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did turn over and he did say, I won't. You see, the thing is, I won't lie about what's happening.
Yeah,
this is what he did say. He did say, do I have your consent? And I said, yeah, go ahead, because I have nothing to hide.
Yeah.
Giving, I think, those small factors into place that happened, I think, allowed yelling out, imagine the headlines, yelling out, you know, he is deaf several, many, many, many times, yelling out that I have nothing on the record, yelling out that you can check anything, I have nothing to hide. I think these things sort of like, all right, well, there's this person who doesn't really have, it's fully transparent.
Yeah.
And he checked, and I have this little glass frasquito, this little jar with English breakfast tea. And so he's like, what is this? He says, what the hell is this? And I said, English breakfast tea? or a cup of morning tea? And he's like, what? And I said, what? I drink tea. And he put it back in. That was that about that. What else? These things are hard to dramatize or play out for another because everything has happened.
Yeah.
So fast.
How long do you think the whole interaction went, you know?
I told Andy más o menos 10 minutes.
Wow. A lot happened in those 10 minutes.
It's very fast. Very fast, but very, a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And then I was given my ID and they said, all right, that's it. There wasn't any question. I suppose this is what I'm sort of upset about. I wasn't asked, did you hear something? Did you, you know, like asking me inquiries? It was, the questions were posed, pinning it on us.
Yeah.
What was that? What the hell was that? Who did that? It's like, those are questions with implications.
Yeah.
Those weren't questions to inquire the surrounding area.
Well, questions were asked with them pulling you out of your car, thrusting you against your own van, pulling a gun out at you. Like, this is not an investigation. That's not an investigation. Like, they're not trying to get to the bottom of it. They're looking to go after somebody. And those first few minutes are very dangerous minutes. When you didn't know what your friend was going to do, and they have their guns out, because that was scary to me in hearing the story, are those first few minutes when they have their guns out, they are already coming at you, and you have to have your hands up, and you are placed in that position of, is my friend not going to understand this, and he's going to get gunned down because of it?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds to me,
really terrified for him.
So it sounds to me like, you know, they use the excuse of some explosion to look into your file, because they're not asking, you know, from what I hear, they're not asking as to where you've been, you know, in the last, you know, moments. And they don't even know what happened, really. You know, they heard some explosion. And so it's first, you know, engage with some subjects, right? Random subjects. Look at their record. Maybe there's something there, and use as an excuse to, you know, to pin you to that record. So it's not really investigative work.
No.
It's really to an excuse. And when Lipson brought this up to me, it brought me back to Nicaragua, and like 2 years ago when the government started repressing, you know, openly, you know, even though repression was happening, you know, in the background, and that cops went from a, you know, using excuses as, you know, oh, hey, like, you know, you committed a traffic violation because cops have that power over there, into now that, you know, the government is openly repressing, is you're a terrorist, you know, having a different excuse to pin down and look on people and extort people. And so, you know, it just makes me wonder about where we're heading, you know, and the extra powers that we're giving cops to use anything as an excuse to look into someone. And, you know, like when I hear your story, you know, and not to take your, you know, your story away, but it reminds me of my interaction with cops, where it is very, very nerve-wracking for anyone just to talk to a cop.
Under conditions of closer to martial law. Because what you're saying is that earlier, because I remember when I visited Nicaragua, you're like, well, cops are cops. They're going to get some money from you by doing traffic things. But it's almost like they do that. We give the money. It's all good. There's not that level of danger. But what you're saying is, when things went down and things were like closer to martial law, then the cops started to behave like what he just experienced.
Exactly. You know, and basically they have more free range to have more power to, you know, do what they can, what they want, you know, and use anything as an excuse to excuse their behavior. And again, like, we are technically, you know, under quasi martial law, you know, where, you know, they have certain powers, like, you know, citing people for not using a face covering, you know, and we know that, for example, for some immigrants, a broken taillight can get them into, you know, the custody of ICE, you know, or someone that maybe for some whatever reason they were in the criminal system, you know, an incident like this can get them back into the system, you know, and so those are the things that I question, you know, of how much power we are giving to cops in this nation, because we know that this nation is particularly violent. You know, the cops, the police in this nation, it looks insane from outside in. Eduardo, you lived abroad. You know, you in I've lived in Nicaragua and Guatemala, and people just look at this and it looks insane when you're outside. How many cops kill people for little things like this or for selling a cigarette? You know, it's just amazing. And you know, I'm okay that I'm glad that you're okay. It didn't escalate, but you know, to your original point, it makes you wonder. You know, because I do remember, Lipson, you happened to be in the car. Remember, we were coming from Oakland. Hema was in the car, and we were crossing the Bay Bridge at night. And the windows were slightly tinted at the front, but that had, you know, been the case for that car for years.
Yeah.
And in that particular occasion, a cop pulled us to the Treasure Island, you know, midway of, you know, coming back from Oakland to San Francisco, onto a dark area in a Treasure Island. And the reasoning the cop, well, first, the cop said, hey, like, does he speak English? I was a driver, completely, like, dismissed me because I was brown. And he was Latino, by the way. He was, like, you know, probably born here, but he was a Latin, you know, background. And then he overpassed me and looked to my partner at the time, Hema, and he's like, does he speak English? That was the first interaction. And then he proceeded to say, yeah, I fear for my security, you know, because I couldn't see inside the car. So he pulled us into a dark area by himself because he feared for his security, you know, to look into my record, you know, and Lipson happened to be in the car, and, you know, we thought it was bullshit at the end. And he ended up giving us a ticket. But again, in different circumstances, you know, we know that in the mission, people have died, you know, for these misunderstandings. You know, a Guatemalan-born person who didn't understand English did rob someone and did go into the back, you know, the trunk of a car. But the cops didn't ask any questions. They shot him 50 times, you know, here in the mission. And you know, and there's many other cases, you know, or that other case where, you know, this other person was robbed and he was chasing the two guys. And then two undercover cops in San Francisco approached him. He was already rattled. You know, he was trying to get his bike back and cops just attacked him, and then they ended up shooting him dead like 30 something times because, you know, there is no investigative work into the circumstances, and it is scary, you know. And I think there is a degree of arrogance that comes from, you know, the cops where, you know,
power.
Yeah. And they don't ask questions. They don't, you know, like you were trying to explain the situation, but they weren't interested in that. You know, they had their motives. And you know, and sorry to keep this going, but one other time when I was in college in Berkeley, you know, very young kid, I was riding an electric scooter bought at Costco by my friends with a helmet. It didn't have a license plate because it didn't need to. It said in the manual. And cops pulled me over, sit me on the curb. And, you know, they didn't handcuff me, but they start asking, whose bike is this? You know, whose scooter is this? And I'm like, it's my friend's. But this is my first interaction with cops. I was probably like 19, you know, and they're like, you need to have a license plate. I'm like, no, I don't. You know, it's in the manual. They like, how come you don't? You must have a license plate. If it's on the street, you need to have my license plate. And they were arrogant about it. And they continued. And then they were asking me about my friend's name. And I couldn't remember because I was so nervous. I feared, you know, because, you know, obviously you grew up in the mission and you know the stories with cops. And so I couldn't remember my friends' names, you know. And then eventually I was like, can I call them? Called them, they came over. And one of my friends who grew up in the Excelsior, who's more used to dealing with cops, she talked to them. And she's like, no, he doesn't need a license, you know. And the cop, like, went to investigate. Long story short, he came back saying, you know what, I don't know. But he didn't say, I don't know. He said, okay, it's not clear. You can go now. Had the certainty that I needed a license plate to ride this, you know, electric scooter that didn't go past 20 miles an hour. It's like a scooter today.
Yeah.
You know, and but he had the certainty that I did, and that I was in trouble, and that I was committing a crime. But, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I'm sorry that you went through this. And
no, it's fine. You know, as I said, I maybe when I asked you right earlier, just feel before my story, I asked you, Andy, why did you want to record? I guess I'm, you know, what Kenny is talking about is sort of why I think I'm present to just the police harassment that exists because of abuse of power, power trips that exist that people have, and what Kenny is saying is arrogance. And I think that this pandemia is giving the state excuses and leeway and allowances, permission in the name of COVID-19 to bother us, to bully us. And if my story is out there, and if someone during this time feels that they need to have some proof that there are patterns that are existing within the police force, that's fine. I'm willing for it to be used. Again, I think my issue with the police on Thursday night is very mild. But it could have escalated had I not said maybe the things that I needed to say. Those little bits, those little phrases of whatever I had to say to defend myself, I can just imagine someone else maybe not knowing what to say and behaving irrationally because they're nervous, because they're anxious, because they're fed up with the police bothering them, and then being, I don't know, taken to jail at the very least, or shot at the very worst.
I don't agree that that's very, what I hear is definitely not, does not sound mild. Like, it sounds like with guns and the approach they took at night,
yeah,
it sounds like this was one small decision away from your friend getting killed, which is one small decision then away from two police officers left with one dead brown person and one live brown person figuring out how they keep their shit alive now. Do they have to put a gun on you? Do they have to put a gun on him? Do they have to shoot you to keep their profession, to keep themselves in the profession in this solitary? That's how that stuff starts to roll after a while, right? Like, it was one small situation that these people put in play because of their, I'm not going to call it unprofessionalism. I actually do think this is how the police are trained. As it relates to, do I think this is COVID-19? What it tells me is that when Kenny said, this is not the way our police operated until martial law in Nicaragua, is that we can at least say that if you're poor and you're brown or black, you live under martial law. That is what we can say. And we have, then the rest of us now who might not live under that form of martial law have to understand that this is what we are opening ourselves up to now when we give up all these rights. And like, I think the story I've been telling is like liberal people who liberals I actually respect, I saw on Facebook when there, and I think this was a sideshow that was going on, and I think it was Latinos who were doing it. And the thing on Facebook was like, the National Guard should come in there and break that shit up. This is from liberals, basically saying that because people were doing a sideshow, you know, and not doing 6 fucking feet of distance or whatever, that we want this police or the National Guard to come in there. I mean, come with a, what are we asking for here? Like, we are literally asking to be enslaved, you know, and justifying it. And it's very, to me, this story could have happened a year ago, I still believe, you know, but this is the country we live in, and this is not going to be nicer as a result of all the things we're signing on for. But most of all, it just brought home these people. I wanted to hear, well, I was curious. I remember when I asked you, like, what was their demeanor as they left, right? Was there even like, you know,
no apology.
Nothing. No. Nothing. Like, fuck you and move on. Like, we just drag you out of your car. We threatened your life over the sound of fireworks far away. And now we leave. I don't know what to call that. Like, people who've been at gunpoint from being robbed, that stays with them the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is a story you're going to forget. And they did that. They didn't knock on the window and say, hey, did you hear that? Hey, do you have a moment to ask? We have some questions. Would you be willing to ask? They can do it in a fucking investigation. Isn't that their job? I mean, it's a totally different thing, you know? And I do believe that the lights were on your van and it showed who you were. And I believe that obviously played a role in how I personally believe that played a role in how they approached you.
Are you talking about profiling?
Yeah.
I mean, a question that maybe is not clear yet. What is the location in this city where that happened? You know?
At McLaren Park. It was at the park.
So McLaren Park is like close to the baby, right? Isn't it?
Kind of. It's sort of like, it's not, it's a different park. That if it extends down and it gets attached to the Bayview, but I'm not sure you were necessarily. It also extends away from. It's more like Excelsior.
Yeah. But the Excelsior too. I mean, like, these are areas that are a little more police than other areas.
Yes.
You know, when we're talking about martial law and occupation, you know, these are areas that are traditionally more lower income. You know, and once you're getting closer to the Bayview, it's blacker.
Yeah.
You know. So there is a little more police, just like in the Tenderloin, where, like, you know, there's a lot of homeless, you know, Black and Latino people. In the Tenderloin, for example, I know, like, I was there not long ago where it's not uncommon to see a cop every two blocks. It's not, you know, but then you go to a place like West Portal and, you know, cops are not very, you know, often seen around. But, you know, someone like me who frequents that area because, you know, him, I used to work there or works there. And, you know, it's afraid of lingering around because I don't want to be looked as suspicious. I don't want to have an interaction like this. But yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, what I need to kind of point out that, I mean, it's my suspicion. It doesn't have to be a fact that, you know, a lot of these areas that are more heavily policed, you're more prone to have these interactions, you know, and then other areas in the city. And I mean, what you know, another thing that comes up to mind when Lipson asks you about this question about the resolution of the interaction is that in my experience, at the end, they want to make it seem like they're doing you a favor by letting you go free, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I did get the sense of that, like, we're letting you go. It's, we're doing you this favor.
Yeah.
And their demeanor, their attitude, the way they spoke to me, the way they cursed at me, the way they approached me, the way they just blocked access from me to my friend, given that he requires ASL, American Sign Language, to be able to communicate. You know, I just feel the entire thing could have been escalated to something else that could have happened. I was very fearful for him more than myself.
Mm-hmm.
I can speak. I can hear what's going on. I can see if they're coming at me. I have visual and, you know, auditory cues to understand that something might happen to me. But you have this person who has no access and has this bright vehicle lights on his face. How is he supposed to understand what is going on? So,
have you communicated with him post this? You know, have you?
Yeah. He he had to go to work right after.
Okay.
So he couldn't. The whole processing with him wasn't there because immediately afterwards he told me once we got in the vehicle, he said, I have to go to work. I told him, oh, all right, let's go. And we were driving, and we can't sign when he's driving because, you know, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
So he has to concentrate. Deaf people, by the way, in case anyone who's out there that listens to this, deaf people are allowed to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, so we couldn't process it. He just dropped me off, and I told him, be careful and have a good evening. I felt really bad. But the following day, yes, we did talk some. And he felt as if this is normal. I mean, his attitude about it was just like, I wanted to ask him if this has happened to him before. And he felt that this was normal. He and I have different experiences in that sense. I feel as if it's similar to my brother. Sometimes when I talk to him and he tells me some of the things that have happened to him on BART, people look at him suspiciously. Those things to me are not normal. but they are normalized for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's really sad, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It's just really sad. I have had instances where I've been with, like I said, with officers, and they haven't always been very nice. And other instances where I have been able to get people off of being arrested because of the way I think I know how to behave around. That's sad, right? That I know how to behave around police officers. But you shouldn't really... police officers shouldn't base what they're going to do with a person based on their attitude. Or, you know, I feel as if when I spoke about this experience with another person yesterday, they said, well, you know how to behave, or you know what to say with a police officer. And I said, well, that's not the point. A lot of people have attitude, this person said. And that's why they get what they get, because they're looking for it. They're almost asking for it. And I said, what? But that's not how, as a society, I think we want. This is not the interaction that I think everyone, even, I don't know, there's something off about people saying that. It really, I understand why they say that, and not to say I understand it like I'm okay with it, but it's not because they'll say these videos, look at how the police, this person acted, but it's not the police officers to be policing attitude or policing judging based on those things. I don't know if I'm making myself clear. Yeah. Kenny or Andy, jump in please, because I don't know, I'm struggling to find, I think you both know what I'm trying to say.
I think there, we at least, I think we've been like led to believe that they are in our spaces, and they're given that power to protect us for our own safety. But you know, I don't see it that way. You know, especially in this nation, you know, the richest nation in the world, where we know, like, I think that's one thing we can all agree that. The most marginalized communities are the most heavily policed, you know, and they don't ask questions first. They draw their guns out. And, but yet at the same time, because I hear this in my own family, you know, like, they know the police fucking sucks. They've seen it, you know, like, we call them and they don't do anything for us. They don't want to get to the bottom of anything. And then at the same time, I hear that same argument, Eduardo, and it's frustrating because, you know, there was an incident with the COVID-19 in New York where some kids were just kind of taunting cops. And I had a very good conversation with my family where I explained my point of view where, you know, and I think I talked to Lipson about it, that the way I see cops is that, you know, or the government in general, they're like a body, you know, and the cops are the belt and they're the disciplinary, you know, but if you're hungry, you know, if you don't have shelter, if you don't have education and all you see is the belt, that's how I explained it to my family, then you're going to disregard the belt. You're going to say, fuck that belt. you're gonna hate that belt because you're getting belted all the time, you know. And then they want to, you know, shape you into behaving decently, you know. So no, you know, like I understand why some of these kids like are like fuck these cops, because my only interaction with them is, you know, discipline. They don't want to talk to me. They want to be arrogant and tell me, you know, how it should be, not considering my circumstances, you know. And but yet my family keeps saying, because I think it's someone like programming, brainwashing, that they're in it for our own good, that someone else should be punished. And therefore, we are policing other people too. And we're encouraging cops to do our bidding, thinking that we're protecting ourselves, thinking that that behavior is going to change just by belting someone else. And I don't think that's the case, you know. But yeah, it is very contradictory and frustrating, you know, that we want to give police more powers when they know they're not in it for us.
Yeah.
So, and that's the scary part, you know, as we face more, you know, this happens during the 9/11, right? The coercive apparatus of this nation was given unlimited power to you know, in the name of our safety. And so will be the same thing with COVID-19. And, you know, they will get more power in the name of your safety, our safety.
Exactly.
And so that's the scary part. You know, how much more are we willing to give up, you know, of our freedom to exist, really?
I appreciate you sharing this, Eduardo. I think the only thing I can add is, well, one is like that cop, they have that protect and serve thing on most of those cop cars. And I do think most people believe that they are protecting in some way, protecting and serving all of us in some way, shape, or form, even unfairly. And that's not true. That the police are an institution to protect and serve the capitalist class. That is why they exist. And they were, you know, back in the day, their origins start with slavery and collecting the property of slave owners. And then moved on into a situation when people were concentrated into urban centers and there was a rising labor movement of basically being a collective way of disciplining and smashing rising labor movement. So essentially protecting the maintenance of the property of the rich and the wealthy and the capitalists. And that's true in every country. That's the role of the police. But they will be more aggressive in a country where the class inequality is worse. And that, I do believe, is the reason for our prison population and the size of it. And it's the reason why they operate as if, for a segment of our population, that they operate as if it's martial law. And I just think there's a message here for people who think, do people really think that the same state which put this force in action, the police, and the police at home and the military abroad, do they really think that this same state is putting us in quarantine for us, for ourselves, for to help us? And this is the part that the left has gotten all wrong, like that I believe, which is to think that somehow the state suddenly is like, oh no, now there's a pandemic. We'll help you. We'll keep you safe. That I believe that is not what the state is operating on. And that has zero to do with why the state is putting us in quarantine. Zero. And because they're the same people who put these other forces in motion, which have nothing to do with our safety, but have everything to do with their maintaining their control. So those rules didn't change just because there's a virus spreading. Those rules were in play prior to the coronavirus. They're going to be in play beyond the coronavirus. It's just a question of how much does the state get away with tightening its grip. And that this story is a cautionary reminder of the nature of our state to me, and whether it's happened. Because I think it could have happened, like you said, and it's not Miles' story. It is not a Miles' story. Like, I understand how you say it's a Miles' story, and I can understand how your friend, he's like, but anyone who thinks, like, it's very scary, and it's outrageous to think that that kind of event could create this moment of near death for you and for your friend. And that's our police.
And maybe, I don't know if we're getting close to wrapping up, but...
Yeah.
It also reminds me that, you know, the most vulnerable, the people with less of a say, get police, you know, and the border is one of the most militarized. And I've heard people who work at the border who talk about it being a zone of occupation.
Yeah.
You know, where they're testing technology that will eventually probably make it to the, you know, bigger population. But they have face recognition at the border. You know, they have
drones
everywhere. What's that?
Drones.
Yeah, they have, you know, the state-of-the-art technology, you know, in excusing it for our safety, the safety of our nation, right? And they use it on people that don't have a voice, you know, because these are migrants, you know, they're not citizens, quote unquote. But, they do it in the name of our safety, in the name of the safety of the populations. But, you know, it's just things to think about, I think.
Do you have any last thoughts or things you want to share about this, Eduardo?
I'm just doing better. Yesterday, I still was, I think there was a process on Thursday night. I felt just shocked. And then Friday, I sort of was in denial that it was sort of important. I just thought that it couldn't have happened. Why would that happen? I mean, yeah, I know it happened, but sort of, I just can't believe it had happened. I sort of thought it was sort of stupid and funny. Not funny like I think it's a joke, but sort of the absurdity of it.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, I think I was upset. I was really upset when I called you. I thought, this is really upsetting that I realized that the most... I think I'm... At last I checked, it wasn't a crime to sit in your vehicle and chat away, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And that's how I felt upset, because I thought, wait, what rights did they have to approach us in this way when we were just chatting? Again, it's not a crime anywhere, just to sit in your vehicle, parked, I should say, because we weren't driving anywhere. We were parked and just chatting. And so I was really upset, and I remembered, and that upsetness, I shared it with you.
Yeah.
So, and then today I thought, whew, I released a lot yesterday, sharing that with the people in my life, my immediate people in my life, meaning the household. And then I thought today, oh, maybe this isn't as bad as what's really happening out there. So, again, me saying mild, maybe it's just me feeling it's, that's it for me.
I appreciate it. And I'm glad, I'm actually glad we have this, and we're going to make a decision about whether, I think this is something really worth sharing, because I think it's just a reminder, and it brings it home. For me, it brings it home of just, this is 1 degree away from all of us, you know?
Mm-hmm. This is the bonus episode of the week.
So I don't think it's like sign off and web node, you know, I think we just kind of like say goodbye. But
I was just getting into that.
Yeah, I know. But I appreciate you taking the time, because I myself was not sure, like, oh, maybe we're not going to do this, you know? And I would have been okay with not. But now that we've gone through the whole thing, I actually think it's worth putting out there.
I'm all right with it, too. And, yeah.
So I'm going to probably start press end on play here.
All right.
Okay.